Welcome to another edition of Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bus Stop. Today, again, we are going to talk Giants versus the Cardinals, which started at 5 today and currently on their way. I'm going to live update this game throughout the telecast. First, I want to let everyone know about how the Giants baseball was the last week. I want to go over the last couple games, the beginning of this series, the last game of the other series. And then at the end of my show, I'm going to go over the Niners win versus the Rams on Monday Night Football and the upcoming game versus the big, scary Broncos. All right, right now I want to live update you on how the Giants are playing right now. It is 2-1 St. Louis. Ryan Vogelsong is pitching for the Giants. Shelby Miller is pitching for the Cardinals. Both teams scored a run in the first. Their run was scored from a Matt Carpenter double. And then who came up? John Jay came up, got a base hit, and then they scored him with a later on like a base hit. And then when the Giants scored, Blanco came up, hit a double to deep center. Panic hit a base hit, moved Blanco over to third, and then Buster came up and hit a sac fly. So right now, 2-1. And then the second inning, Vogelsong let up another hit, a double to Wong, who's probably going to be the MVP of the series so far. He's hit a walk-off home run. He's on fire, hitting above 500 for the series. And then the dreadful, the Giants hate him. Giants fans hate this guy, A.J. Pierzynski. He came up and whacked the first pitch, change up the middle for base hit, and Colton Wong scored. So that is how we are at 2-1. Ryan Vogelsong's already at 50 pitches, and Shelby Miller's only thrown 20. Let's talk about Vogi for a second. Vogi, you know, he has such great playoff experience. He's dominant usually. He hasn't lost, but right now he is looking awful, absolutely awful. I mean, he can't throw his best pitch as the fastball. Last time, 8 days ago against the National, he was throwing that 94, 95 mile an hour, getting over the plate, hitting the corners. Today, he's at 91, 92, not even getting close, throwing all the ball up in the zone. And when you throw the ball up in the zone, bad things happen. Very, very bad things happen. So right now, Ryan Vogelsong is pitching to Matt Holliday. It's a 1-0 count. I'm going to keep you live updated. I'll probably be screaming or yelling. Depends on what happens, and then I'll inform you on what's going on. So let's talk about let's just stick with this Cardinals series. We all know what happened in the National Series. We won that last game. I don't know how, but you know, we got through that series. And let's talk about this Cardinals game 1. Game 1 was a great game for the Giants. We won 3-0. Bumgarner pitched 7 2/3, scoreless, let up 3 hits. He was just absolutely masterful. What I mean masterful, I mean he was hitting his spots. He was striking people out. I think he had double digits strikeouts. He was just on. He could not be hit. The only person that got, I think he let up 4 or 5 hits, and John Jay had 2 of them, and I think Colton Wong had 2 of them too. So, you know, those are their 2 hottest hitters, and if that's the only 2 people getting hits, then you know what? That's a good day. Update, Holliday double to right. God, Vogelsong is just not looking good at all. And then base hit by Mike Adams, and Holliday moves to third. So first and third, no outs. This is what I'm talking about. You know, you see Ryan Vogelsong struggling. This is where you got to have the bullpen ready. Petit, come on, he's got to pitch right now 6 innings. This is just looking awful. I think they have, let's see how many hits they have. They have 6 hits in 2 innings. It has even, they don't even have it out on the third yet. They have 6 hits. And Ryan Vogelsong has 51 pitches. What? This is crazy. Come on. Come on, Giants. We need to. This is an important game. Game 4 is huge. You go 3-1 and you increase the deficit by 2 games, or you get the series back to even, and they get the home field advantage back, because then they were playing 2 more back in St. Louis after Game 5. So this is going to be a very important game, and I think the Giants' offense has to become more alive because, you know, as you'll see, I've talked about it, the Giants haven't scored more than four runs in any of the games. Yeah, 4 runs. Yeah, which is just, come on, this is ridiculous. We have no, our offense is just absolutely pitiful right now. I think Dave Rigetti just came out to talk to the pitcher. Petit starts throwing in the bullpen after Holiday collects third leadoff double in a row. So that's right, they have three doubles in a row, leadoff hitters. So that means Gerani Peralta ground into a double play. Matt Holiday scores, so it's 3-1 now. God. You know, once they get above three runs, you know, the Giants have a hard time coming back. Yeah, Giants usually have the lead by now and trying to give the game away, but we got to work through this. Our hitting's got to actually hit. We got to score some runs. Can't just be scoring on pass balls and errors. All right, let's get back to the game one. So 3-0 was the score. Bumgarner pitched amazing. Sergio Romo came in for one batter and just struck him out, looking great. His slider was just looking nasty, like the old Sergio days, the Sergio days that we all wish came back. You know, he was throwing that nasty curve. He had that slider slurving all over the place. People don't know where it's coming, especially to right-handed or left-handed hitters. It just falls off the table. You don't even know where it's going. It's just gone, and it just swing over the top of it. But when it's not going right, we saw what happened during the regular season. He would throw that slurve, and it would just hang up over the middle, and boom, see you later. Like, kind of like I'll talk about in a little bit, but I'll talk about game two. And then Casilla, who has just had the most phenomenal playoffs postseason so far. He threw just, I think in that, he 1-2-3 without a doubt. Just, there's no chance that they were going to get anyone on. He's throwing all of his stuff for over for strikes. He's just throwing gas. He's throwing 95 and then changing up to a 78-mile-an-hour curveball. It's like, how does a batter react to that, seeing a 95-mile-an-hour forcing fastball, which is moving away from the hitter, right-handed hitter, and moving into a left-handed hitter, and then changes up into a curveball, which is just so slow, and it drops right over from, it's a 6-12 curveball. It's kind of, you know, you think about it, look at a clock, 12-6 curveball, drops like that, just drops straight down. And, you know, it's really just unhittable when he's on. He's just proven that he is the closer and should be the closer, and he has closer stuff. Oh, St. Louis hit a home run. Colton Wong, his second. Oh, 4-1. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, but I'm going to be very upset here in a second. This is not going good. Vogie is looking awful. Time to bring in the reliever. Oh, he crushed it down the left field line. God. That is not going to be good for the Giants. I mean, we have 3 runs now to make up, and I mean, there's tons of time. It's only the top of the third. You know, that we can chip away. We've done it before. We can do it now, but this is just getting out of hand, you know. Very, very obnoxious. All right. Let's see the same problem as the last series. I mean, leaving men on base. You know, against the Nationals, we left a ton of people on base. And on the first game, well, you know, we left 10 people on base. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You have all these people on base, and we just got to get out of the inning. Or we got to get score some runs. Like, we got to manufacture runs. We have all these people on base, and we just, I think we went 2-for-6. No, sorry, 1-for-6 against the Cardinals in the game one with runners in scoring position. It's just not. It's not how you win baseball games. I mean, they have winning, but, you know, people are fine with that. But, you know, the luck is not going to last forever. I mean, hopefully it does, but we want to score runs, not by walking in runs, errors, wild pitches. We'll get into that in a second. Of course, good pitching and great defense, game one. Great defense. You got sliding catches by Blanco. You got, he's covering the whole outfield. He may not be able to hit, but he can for sure cover the outfield extremely well, better than most players. Him and I think he's better outfield than Angel Bagan, but, you know, hitting, oh, we just cannot set the table with our leadoff guy. You know, Panic can do so much. He's more of a move a person over, let's get somebody over to second base, and that's what Pagan was hitting three plus, you know, great on-base percentage, has a great eye. And so, you know, it's kind of hurting our offense that Pagan's not back. And, you know, Morse is finally somewhat healthy, but we've only seen him a couple of bats. Hopefully we can see him a couple more. I mean, when we're down big, we need to score runs, so that's what we got to do. Right now, it's still 4-1, top of third, two outs, two strikes, one ball to A.J. Pruszynski, who got an RBI single the last time he was a bat. All right, let's go move on. Let's talk about game two, which was a 4-5 loss in the bottom of the 10th. So this one went to extra innings. Okay, Pruszynski flied out to right, so this inning is over. Vogelsong is due up first, so I assume that he is not going to hit. I hope he's not going to hit. I hope we bring in Petit. You know, somebody, you know, he's let up one run in the first, one run in the second, two runs in the third. So it's, you know, it's just he hasn't shut them down once yet this game. And we can't afford, this is playoff baseball. This is playoff baseball. We cannot afford to give up run after run every inning. You know, we're not going to come back. We don't have a high-powered offense. We have to somehow stop them. So this is it. No more runs. I don't want to give them any more runs. This is not going to be a 10-8 game. This is not going to be a 15-14 game. This is going to be a 5-4 game, 4-1 game. You know, we gotta somehow scratch our way back, somehow put some runs up on the board. Get into desperation mode, you know. This is game four. This is a huge game. You know, they say the biggest point in tennis is 15-30. Because, you know, if you win, you have a decisive chance of winning that game. And if you lose, it's back to even, and it's all from square one there. So this is a huge, huge game for the Giants. I feel like we gotta, you know, be more aggressive, take some chances, swing for the fences. I know we've hit zero home runs. It's been over 200 at-bats since we hit our last home run. Our last home run was Brandon Belt's walk-off home run in the 18th against the Nationals. That was our last home run. That's over 200 at-bats. We were not that bad of a home run hitting team. We have power throughout the lineup. Ishikawa can hit a home run. Brandon Belt can hit it. Crawford can hit a home run. Pence can hit a home run. Pablo, Buster. Buster hasn't even hit a extra base hit. He's hitting over 300 in the playoffs, but he loves all singles. It's just, God, we got to produce more offense. This is just driving me nuts. Okay, so pinch hitting for Ryan Vogelsong is Joaquin Arias, and he's going to be leading off the third. I will keep you updated on that. So let's go back to game two. So the Giants lost 4-5 in the 10th. Peavy pitched. It was a little shaky. He let up four runs in the first four innings, you know, but he did what he had to do. He got us through four innings, and then our bullpen came in, and it was just absolutely excellent. Did not allow any more runs, just shut them down. Then it got, but our offense was just, you know, okay. So in the bottom of the, or top of the ninth, sorry, there was one out. We pinch run Duffy. Panic gets a hit. So it's first and second. Duffy on first, Panic on second. And then they're pitching to Buster. 3-2 count. Wild pitch, and Duffy scores from second. What a huge play. They're running on the play, 3-2 count, two outs. He's running, a wild pitch. He sees the ball, and he just turns and hits third and goes home and slides in safely. It was a great play, great heads-up play by a rookie, of course. Like, our rookies are playing very, very well. Panic, Duffy, and we haven't seen much of Susak. But, you know, that's just a heads-up play, something that you don't expect a rookie in playoff situation in the top of the ninth when the game can be over to make such a daring play. But, you know, it was wonderful. It was great to see. You know, there was a lot of, you know, emotion. I thought the Giants were going to win the game. You know, I thought we had all the momentum. We had all the juju going our way. But, no. Then in the 10th inning, Sergio Romo comes in the bottom of the 10th, and second pitch lets off a walk-off home run to Colton Wong. Arias single to right, so that's, you know, Vogie's out. Arias comes in to pinch hit and get a base hit. Now top of the order is up. Blanco, Panic, and Buster. Let's hopefully we can score at least one in this. And, you know, you don't have to score it all back right away. You know, you chip at the lead. You keep chipping, chipping, chipping. You know, you keep chipping. And then they'll start making mistakes. And once they start making mistakes, we can come back. You know, the pitcher will throw the ball up. You know, hopefully we run into one and hit one out. That would be a miracle. That really would be a huge miracle. Yeah, it's just like I want the Giants to hit the ball. I want them to be aggressive. You know, another flare. Out of our four hits, we have two flares. It's Giants baseball. What do you expect? It's torture. As a Giants fan, you know what torture is from 2010, where they had no offense, absolutely no offense. People were, you know, happy when we got walked. But somehow we won the World Series, and we showed how, you know, we can work. And without being a powerful hitting team, we can score runs, and great pitching, great defense can win championships. But, you know, I think we're facing better teams right now. St. Louis, we faced them, and we did not face them in 2010. We faced them in 2012. We faced the Phillies in the NLCS in 2010. And you know, our pitching at that time was just phenomenal. Lincecum was at his prime. Kane was at his prime. Who else do we had some great, great pitching. Sanchez was pitching pretty well. If you guys don't remember Sanchez, he was probably my least favorite Giants of all time. You know, he would be off and on. He had that no-hitter, which was just so great. In the next game, he lets up 9 runs in the first inning. So that's what you have to deal with. You know, what the Giants have done so well is develop good pitching, you know. It's become, you know, our farm system. We bring up these good pitchers, such as Bumgarner, Lincecum. We've all developed those, which is just, it's how you win championships. You know, you see all these teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Angels. They buy all these players, but you know, they get into the playoffs, but they can't move forward. Like the Angels, 2 years in a row, boom, out of the playoffs. Dodgers, 2 years in a row, boom, out of the playoffs. You can't buy players. You know why? Because it's, you have to develop. You see, you know, Bumgarner was pitching to Buster Posey in Fresno, the AAA Fresno team. And they have this connection, you know. They've worked, they've gone up together. They were in the AA, AAA, where they were driving around in buses. It was not luxury. They weren't living the luxurious life yet. They were still, you know, living their everyday struggle, baseball life. But, you know, Buster Posey was a first round pick, so we all knew he was gonna, you know, come up to major league soon. But Bumgarner, you know, he was showing how dominant he was down in Fresno, and the Giants had to make a move in 2010, brought him up, pitched in the World Series, pitched in Game 6 of the World, or no, sorry, Game 5 of the World Series. It looked absolutely phenomenal. So I just want to tell you, that's how you build a championship team. You don't build a championship team by just throwing money around and getting the best players, because I guess the best players get old. The best players want to win for themselves. The best players want to make the most money. Best players just want their stats to look the best. So, you know, that's the feeling I got. So Gregor Blanco grounded out to first, Joaquin Arias to second. So man on second, one out, and Joe Panic will be up. I hope he had a base hit in the first. He's, you know, he didn't have a hit in the last couple games, but he's slapping the ball around. He's hitting the ball hard. They're just playing him perfectly. You know, like, Matt Adams just sitting on the line yesterday. Panic crushed one down the line. And he just caught it, just positioned in the perfect area. So let's see what he can do here with runners in scoring position. He's hitting 300 for the series. So let's hope for more from Panic. You know, this is the kid of our future. This is what we need. So it's a 2-0 count right now. Maybe he can hold out, get a walk, get Buster up. Buster maybe could tie it in one hit. That would be great. But, you know, I'm not putting any eggs into the home run basket for the Giants. Let's see. Where was I? Okay, game two. So when Romo gave up that walk-off home run to Colton Wong, you know, it was devastating, but splitting the series in St. Louis is good. But I have a stat that is just really mind-boggling to me and to the announcers. So the Giants' bullpen has let up 7 runs, which is not awful, not bad. And they pitched a lot of innings this postseason. All right, Panic. Let's see what he did. He flied out to center. Arias the third. Crap. Okay, so let's go Buster. This is a big time for Buster. We need to put at least one on the board right now. We have to because you can't let them have shutdown innings. I talked about this before. Shutdown innings are so important to a team because, you know, you scored runs, you got the momentum, and now you want to shut them down so that they don't get that momentum back or slow your momentum down. But I just would like to see a hit by Buster. I would like to see an extra base hit. He's only had singles all postseason. All right, so, sorry, let me get back to my unbelievable set. The bullpen against St. Louis and the Nationals have allowed 7 runs. All of those 7 runs have been off of solo home runs. A solo home run is when somebody hits a home run with no one on base. This is just mind-boggling to me. You know, our bullpen didn't even only let up 12 home runs all year. And now they've let up 7 in 8 games? It's just amazing. All solo, all important. Now, Hunter Strickland has 4 of them. 3 against the Nationals and 1 against the Cardinals. It was Matt Adams who hit a bomb, an absolute bomb into McCovey Cove. You know, it's Strickland is struggling. And Bochy came out and said, yeah, Strickland is struggling. He can't pitch against left-hand hitters. All 4 of his home runs that he's let up have been to left-handed hitters. And it's just not what you want to happen. You don't want this young 95, 96, 97, 98 mile-an-hour fastball flamethrower just to get into his head that he can't pitch the left-hander. So right now we got to develop him. He's coming in for 1-2 outs. He can't be coming in for whole innings. Can't be pitching against their meat of the order. He's just too predictable. When you just have one dominant pitch, you know, he has that slider, which is nice, but he's just not dominant with it. It's hard for a player to just rely on one pitch because these are professional athletes. These are the best of the best, and they're in the postseason for a reason, the Cardinals. They know how to hit. They know how to hit rookie pitchers. They know how to hit fastballs. What he really needs to become is a fastball slider changeup guy, and if he gets that, he will be unhittable. He truly will be unhittable. But right now, Boch needs to relax on him and, you know, rely on more of Affelt and Javier Lopez. I know those are only two left-handed pitchers in the bullpen, and they've had a lot of work this postseason. I mean, because we're facing a lot of left-handed batters in the St. Louis lineup, and it's we only have 2 left-handed pitchers so in the bullpen, so it's like you have to conserve them. So that's why he's been using Strickland. But now I think he realized that, you know, maybe it's not the best decision to use him. Maybe we should use Strickland for late inning, extra inning games. You know, get out their 7, 8, 9 hitters. So that is what's going on right now. It is full count, 3-2, 2 outs to Buster Posey, and Shelby Miller only has 38 pitches in the top of the 4th. So I mean, he's pitching well. The Giants really have just been getting no offensive support. We only have a couple extra base hits in the series. No home runs, like I talked about. And you know, it's like I was listening to the announcers last night, which I hate. I hate Joe Buck. He's a St. Louis fan, and he roots for the Cardinals. And everyone else is like, no, he's so good. You don't know he's rooting for the Cardinals. Yeah, he's from St. Louis. He has a huge bias. And whenever the Cardinals do anything well, he goes crazy. Whenever the Giants do something well, he's in a monotone voice. So, you know, I'd rather listen to no volume and listen to my mother talk about the game than Joe Buck talk. But we'll keep going on from that. Buster Posey, ball in play. Single, yes. So 4-2, Giants. Let's go. 2-out rally. Let's go. Pablo's up. Let's see if we can do something with Buster at first. Let's see. Sorry, I keep checking the score. I'm a huge Giants fan. I wouldn't be talking about Giants for a whole hour if I wasn't a huge Giants fan. But let's just move back on to the bullpen. Let's see. So Affelt's looking great. Affelt's pitching, you know, his play. playoff situation. He's just a great all-around pitcher, can off-speed, change the speeds up, throw strikes. And that's important. You know, a lot of people don't understand that there's so much pressure in the playoffs. It is so hard to throw strikes because you don't want to make that mistake. You do not want to leave a curveball over the middle. You don't want to leave a fastball belt high. Those are going to be hammered. This is the playoffs. People take these opportunities and run with them. So pitchers have to throw strikes. It's hard to explain because, you know, that's what they should be doing. They should be throwing strikes. But it is so hard. Their nerves are running. 40,000-plus people are yelling. It's a different kind of atmosphere. You don't see baseball games have this kind of atmosphere unless it's the playoffs. You know, in basketball games, a good game, OKC, the Thunder versus the Warriors, you know, you'll see a packed house yelling and screaming, the place going, getting so loud, just like if it was a playoff game. You go to a Dodger-Giants game, it doesn't even get as close to as loud as any playoff games. These playoff games are people are standing, places packed. It's just an incredible atmosphere. And I bet it's an incredible atmosphere there tonight. It's a little chilly. It was cold here. So let's hope they can continue on with this inning. So let's see. Game three. Our first game at home. Game started at 1:07. What a very, very weird start time, especially because the Kansas City Orioles game was on at 5:07, which means 8:07 in the Eastern time. So their game wasn't over till 12 o'clock sometime, and our game was at 1:07, and everyone in the Bay Area, you know, have to watch this at work. So it was just a weird situation. You know, I was in class. How to follow along, you know, I have to ask my teacher permission to use my cell phone so that I can follow along. But of course, they gave it to me as we scored runs. You can hear everyone in the class yelling, me more than anyone, because I'm just obnoxious like that. So let's see. Pablo base hit. Oh, Pablo walked. Wow, that's a very interesting thing. Pablo doesn't take many walks. And that's also, I'll bring up the fact about Chelmy Miller. When he has one walk or less in a game, he is 13-0. So if he walks zero or one period, he is untouchable. But if he has a couple more walks, that means he's wild. That means he's throwing pitches where he doesn't want to throw them. That means we could hit him. So hopefully there's more walks comes after that. So game three, 1:07 start. Hudson was starting. He went six strongs, let up four runs. I think Bochy made a mistake. Yes, I'm saying Bochy made a mistake. He left him in one hitter too long. Gerlich hit it was in the top of the six, two outs. And Hudson was struggling through this inning. And Bochy was like, oh, let's see if he can get through this inning. Second pitch of the bat, it just leaves a hanging cutter right over the middle of the plate. Boom. Sayonara. That ball was crushed down the left field line, hits the foul post, tied game. At that point, I'm like, oh, it's over. We lost this. We had 4-0 lead. They're coming back. Yeah, we scored all four runs in our first and couldn't even get another hit. Hudson was our only hit until extra innings, or only runner on base, sorry, which makes it even worse, so I was very, very not happy what was going on. Hold on, there's an update. Action in the Cardinals bullpen. RBI single by Hunter Pence. Let's go. 4-3 Cardinals over Giants. So we'll see. I think Shelby Miller might be getting removed from this game soon. Let up another two runs. Two out rally. The pitcher's name is Sally. Let's go. So, yeah, Hudson was our only hit from inning one, if you can take out the first inning. So from two to nine, so eight innings, there was one hit, and that was from our pitcher. Okay, that's Giants baseball for you, torture. They were having the quickest innings, 10-pitch innings, 15-pitch innings. And it just made me feel so uncomfortable, and they were having these long, drawn-out innings with runners getting in scoring position. And it was just so frustrating to watch. It was really just mind-blowing how just how bad the offense was. It just hurt. But, you know, that's what happens. And then the Giants get into the 10th. The first person walks. We pinch run. Then Panic gets a base hit. Oh, and that was nice. Then Buster was a... And then he walks. Oh, no, sorry. It was the bottom of the order, so I was thinking about the game, too. We get up. Crawford gets a walk, which he, against the Cardinals closer, he cannot hit. He was 0-for-6, but he had 4 walks. He had, I think it was 8-9 pitch at bat. It was fouling off pitches left and right. Giants get a ball in play. Fly out to center field for Brandon Belt. The inning's over, but that's great. Like I said, we need to make sure that they didn't get a shutdown inning. We'd make sure that they didn't get the momentum. We make sure we are still in this game. So I'm very happy with this bottom of the third. And there's still tons of time left. Again, you know, you see there was no extra bases hits. There was a walk. There was a base hit. The Giants need some more extra base hits. Make life easier for me. Yeah, that's what I want them to do. Make my life easier. Not give me all this stress. I feel like I have a stress of a 1,000-pound elephant on my back when I watch these games. We won the game in the bottom of the 10th on an error by the pitcher. Crawford got on first. Juan Perez was trying to bunt him over. Failed twice. So if you bunt on the third, if you bunt with 2 strikes and you foul it, you're out. So he decides not to bunt. He decides, let's hit it. So boom, gets a base hit. Great. Then Blanco gets up. Bunts it on the second pitch. Great bunt. Blanco's an absolute phenomenal bunter. And he's so fast. He's busting his butt down the line. The pitcher, Choate, who's a sidearm pitcher, which is interesting because sidearm pitchers have a very hard time throwing the ball to a base because they're not used to throwing the ball over their head. Like a normal throw, like a second baseman or third baseman. They're used to coming from the side. He threw from the side. The ball had so much movement, cutting away, ran away from the first baseman, gets by. Crawford scores from second. You know, we win that game in the bottom of the 10th, and only the Giants know how to walk off like that. it's another Giants torture win, but hopefully it gave us momentum. And now we're currently at game 4. Let's see. Choate is up earlier. Choate is back. Choate is the one that lost the game for the Cardinals last night. He was up in the bullpen getting ready. And Yasmero Petit has entered the game for the Giants. Hopefully he can shut them down like he did in the 18th inning game. You know, he came in through 6 complete innings. No runs, couple hits, just looked phenomenal. So let's hope he can keep that up. All right. After this break, I am going to talk about more Giants baseball. I'm going to give you more live updates, give you more of my cynical opinions. Later on, I'm going to talk about the Niners, about their Monday night game against the Rams, which might have been some proving ground, might have been some showing off, which I love, maybe showing a little bit of our offense that we haven't seen in a while. Some major injuries that occurred that are not going to be good for the Niners going forward against the Broncos. And, of course, I'm going to review the Broncos game, which is scary to me. Anytime Peyton Manning goes up against your defense without your 2 best linebackers, you got to be scared. All right, so catch me in a couple minutes after this quick break. All right, thank you.
This is DJ Bosco with another Bosco Break. If you like shopping online, you'll be used to the endless stream of disappointing deals and sales pushed in front of you by retailers every day. They just never quite turn out to be the bargains they claim to be. Very few outlets offer extremely low prices on premium products, and even few make the experience of purchasing them fun and entertaining. But there are still some amazingly good deals to find out there that'll save you heaps of money. But they only exist on a handful of websites. One such retailer is a new online auction website called Quibids, who have worked out a way to sell you must-have products at prices that are so low you won't believe your eyes. Their product range is extensive and includes some of the most sought-after consumer items available. Examples are Apple devices, iPads, iPhones, and MacBooks, to HD televisions, Nikon cameras, and even jewelry and gift cards to premium retailers. To understand how this works, you first need to know what an entertainment auction is. This auction model is different to traditional online auction formats such as eBay. Every time a bid is placed, a charge of a few cents is made to their customers. Added up, these small individual charges amount to quite a lot. This enables them to sell an item that costs hundreds or even thousands of dollars for no more than 30 or 40 bucks. Simply put, the retail prices they charge are by far the lowest available online. Every time a customer bids, the auction is extended by no more than 20 seconds, and the last person who placed a bid when the clock time reaches zero receives the right to purchase the item at the discounted price. While you get a big buzz from winning an auction, strategizing over when to bid and how many bids to place is also huge fun. CEO Matt Beckman said that they are growing incredibly fast and that their numbers of customers now reaches into the millions. This is a new type of shopping that appeals to a mass audience. Consumers expect more when they shop these days, and Quibids offers that, he said. For an auction winner, the true cost of the item purchased is slightly higher than the final price the auction ended with, because the auction winner would have spent a few dollars bidding several times in the auction. Typically, this amount is fairly modest, so when both elements are added up, customers on average save around 75 to 85% of cost. For those who participate in any auction and don't win, they are able to use a buy now feature to purchase the product at a discounted rate, which is the listed price minus the value of the bids they have placed. This basically means the auctions are a no-loss proposition, which is pretty amazing. So if you are looking to save up to 90% on items such as brand new iPads for $32, a Samsung HD TV for $37, or a Canon Rebel T3i camera bundle for $27, check out Quibids today. That's the end of your Bosco break. Back to the show. When you see me right by. Bosco break. Ancient tableware, lead anchors, and a giant bronze spear have been recovered during an expedition to the 2,000-year-old Antikythera shipwreck in Greece. The treasure-filled sunken ship was first discovered more than a century ago. Now, undersea excavators who are revisiting the wreck say it actually covers a much bigger area than expected. The evidence shows this is the largest ancient shipwreck ever discovered. Brendan Foley, a marine archaeologist from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Massachusetts, said in a statement. It's the Titanic of the ancient world. Over the past few weeks, Foley and his colleagues used a suit of high-tech equipment, including a semi-robotic exosuit, to explore the famed Antikythera wreck. The ship sank sometime between 70 BC and 60 BC on its way from Asia Minor to Rome. Sponge fishermen found the wreck in 1900 off the coast of Antikythera, a small Greek island positioned along an ancient shipping route. Those divers salvaged statues of heroes and horses, jewelry, furniture, glassware, and the Antikythera mechanism, a complex astronomical calculator. But exploring the site 180 feet below the surface proved dangerous. One diver died of the bends, and two were left paralyzed. Jacques Costel found more tantalizing objects when he revisited the Antikythera wreck decades later. To find out what else might be buried beneath the seafloor, Foley and the Greek Ministry of Culture conducted underwater excavations from September 15th to October 7th. WHOI said high-resolution 3D maps suggest that the wreckage might span 980 feet of the seafloor, and the ship was perhaps up to 164 feet long. Divers recovered multiple lead anchors and a bronze ridging ring with bits of wood still attached. An intact table jug, a piece of an ornate bed leg, and a 6.5-foot-long bronze spear were buried in the sediment. The spear may be part of a statue of a warrior or the goddess Athena, or perhaps part of a larger warrior or chariot sculpture, Foley said. The team plans to return next year for further excavations. As for other fascinating discoveries, a Bronze Age woman buried in Spain wore a symbol of her wealth and power on her head, an elegant silver crown. The silver circlet was one of several dozen precious items found in the woman's tomb, which she shared with a male adult. The tomb sits in the La Almoloya Plateau, located in southern eastern Spain. Between about 2200 BC and 1550 BC, the site was a bustling political center with multiple residential complexes and tombs. The tomb stands out because the man and woman inside are curled into flexed positions and surrounded by precious and semi-precious objects. In addition to the woman's tiara, the tomb contains silver rings, earrings, and bracelets, as well as a bronze dagger nailed to its handle with silver fastenings. A delicate ceramic cup was gilded with silver on the rim and exterior, representing some of the earliest silver work seen on such a vessel. Sounds like it's time to go treasure hunting. That's all for your Bosco break. Back to the show.
And welcome back. Thank you, Bosco, for those great Bosco pranks. Always interesting, always crazy. All right, I'm going to update you right now. Petita's in. He struck out the first two batters of the inning. Gurlich, who hit the home run yesterday in the sixth off of Hudson, he struck him out. And then very interesting move by the Cardinals, keeping in their pitcher Shelby Miller to hit, and he struck out. This is interesting for many reasons. Everybody is posting on Twitter, pull him, it is time. But doesn't look like Mike Matheny is going to do that, and that's why I love Bochy. Bochy knows when to pull players. You know, three innings, two innings, this is playoff baseball. You do not have another day to live. You are playing for now. You are playing for right now. You cannot go on. You cannot lose a couple games and, you know, work it out the next series. And Yusmeiro Petit just struck out Matt Carpenter. Matt Carpenter struck out the side, so there's a shutdown inning for the Giants. And I bet AT&T Park is going crazy. Going crazy. I love it. I really, really love it. Let's see. So I was talking about Shelby Miller. He keeps him in, which is very interesting. They did this, so they made a move before the series started. Usually, so there's a 25-man roster. Usually it's 12 pitchers, 13 or 13 pitchers, 12 hitters. But the Cardinals decided to go with 12 pitchers and 13 hitters because their catcher was coming into the series hurt. And that has a lot to do with the decision that he just made to keep Shelby Miller in. Because they've used a lot of pitchers the last four nights, and they don't want to burn through their pitchers too early because it's only the bottom of the fourth. But, you know, this is playoff baseball. You don't have options. You don't have time to waste. You can let up another couple of runs this inning, and you know what? There you go. Shelby Miller is the first one out of the dugout and heads to the mound for the fourth. So I am glad Mike Matheny is leaving him in. I am fine with that. He's already up at like 55, 60 pitches, you know, not looking very good. The Giants got good hits last inning, and, you know, it's Petit who's up first, you know, a reliever, not really a starter, a spot starter, has a couple bats this year, you know, not a good hitter. We'll give that out. And then Gregor Blanco, Joe Panic come up. And there we go, back to the top of the lineup, and let's go. This is a huge inning. I think we need to get to Shelby because he is not going to be there next inning. He is going to be pulled. That's why I love Bochy. He does make some mistakes. He stuck with Hudson too long last night. He stuck with Strickland too long two nights before that. So, you know, he does make mistakes, but he's way better. It's in playoff baseball, it's about the managers have such hard decisions to make on who to bring in off out of the bullpen, when to make double switches, when it is the right time to pull your pitcher, when is the wrong. I mean, in regular season, you can always leave him in an extra couple batters, hope, you know. Losing one game is not bad, but playoffs, losing one game, it could be a devastating loss. It could swing the momentum. It could do a lot of different things. You know, Boach has done it before. I was listening pregame, and they were talking about Bochy and how his Hall of Fame pedigree. I think he is a Hall of Fame coach. He passed Tommy Lasorda, which is the Dodgers' greatest head coach of all, or sorry, not a head coach, a manager of all time. Boach passed him with over 1,600 wins. You know, has two World Series rings, with like one more to make him sure, guaranteed into the Hall of Fame. I've been to the Hall of Fame. When I was a kid, I went to a Hall of Fame baseball camp in New York, in Cooperstown. It was great. Played so much baseball during the day, and then at midday, we'd go hang out in Cooperstown, go watch other teams play, go meet people, broadcast. It was just a great old time. I really did love, going to those camps. I did a lot of that when I was a kid, a lot of baseball camps, a lot of training. And, you know, it was funny. Everyone was either a Yankee fan or a Red Sox fan, and I was the only kid from California rooting for my Giants. And, you know, in the car, this is before the Red Sox won any World Series since 1918. You know, we'd be driving in the bus to the Hall of Fame, and all the Yankees fans would be cheering in the seats. They'd be going 1918, 1918, which is just, you know, mocking them, because I think the Yankees have 24 World Series since then, so something like that. But now ties have turned. You know, the Red Sox have, in the last 10 years, have more World Series than the Yankees. It's pretty funny. You know, that was my childhood, though. I always grew up around sports. I was never allowed to play video games. I have three sisters. I wanted to get away from them. I'd go outside and shoot hoops by myself or something like that. So let's hope the Giants can do it. Travis Ishikawa grounded out to second, and now Brandon Crawford's going to be up on deck, and then Petit. So hopefully we can do something with this inning. Yeah, it would be really a devastation if we don't do it. Carlos Martinez is in the bullpen, and Choate, who the guy gave up the walk-off error last night, is also in the bullpen. So we'll see how that goes. I kind of want to talk about the Kansas City Royals for 1 second. I know this is a Bay Area sports team, but the Royals got into the World Series today. They swept the Orioles. This is the first time in the World Series since 1985 when they won it with George Brett. But they look like the 2010 Giants. Great pitching. Absolutely great pitching. Timely hitting. They don't get many hits. They have very, very timely hitting. You know, Hosmer is their Buster Posey. He's just a stud. He's an absolute stud. You know, works so hard defensively, plays a great first base, leader of that team. And then you got these guys, Dyson and Kane, who are just these speed demons. They're on first base, and you want them to go. You want them to steal second, steal third. Just makes, they have such an exciting game, you know, that they play, and it's real, real fun to watch. It's real fun to be a part of, you know. I'm very happy for them, but now, just, you know, this is a very interesting situation that they're put in. You know, the Rockies did this a couple years ago. They went swept through the playoffs and then got to the World Series way earlier than the other teams in the AL, and then they just have this layoff, which is bad. Having long layoffs for a baseball team is not good. Because the Kansas City Royals came in, you know, they had the one-game playoff to get into the postseason, and I think that gave them the momentum and gave them all the energy and showed that they could win, and it kept them going. They kept playing, and then the next team they played, you know, had that break, and so that they so it's just, you know, it's like the Giants, too. You know, we came in, we played the game. The Nats didn't play a game for 4 days, you know, 3 days. So they were a little out of whack. So Kansas City needs to be careful about that. There is a definite situation when that happens. All right, let's go into the Niners now. So the St. Louis Rams game, it started off awful. It started off absolutely pitiful. I was laying on the ground, was throwing a hissy fit, you know. Rams come down, Austin Davis, who is that? Four string starter cut, was working at a local high school before getting called into play. Boom, first drive, he looks phenomenal. 4 out of 4 throwing. They score a touchdown right away, and then we go 3 and out. Just the Niners go 3 and out. Don't look good, can't run the ball. Actually, first drive, we didn't even run the ball. We threw the ball 3 times, and it was just did not look good. Update, Brandon Crawford, full count. This is going to be his 9th pitch of the, or 7th pitch of the bat. Eighth pitch of the bat. He is looking, this is what he does. He has these long at bats. The defense looked bad. It looked like they couldn't stop anything. Crawford walk, which is, that's perfect. Now you have Petit up. You can bunt him over and have, Gregor Blanco with a guy on second up. That's easier said than done. Hopefully Petit can get that done. We were down 14-0. I saw very little hope. We finally scored a field goal with about 5 minutes left. Our offense looked good, and then we stalled. Kaepernick in the beginning, he didn't look good. Like the first pass he threw it right. He threw it right to an opposing defender. And, defense has a very hard time to picking him off or intercepting him is because he throws the ball so hard. He throws it like 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And the reason why is wide receivers catch it, first of all, they get paid to catch it. And second of all, they're used to it. They get it all day long in practices and all that. But these defenders cannot catch it. He's done this multiple times where he's just thrown right to the defender and they just cannot catch it, which is a great break. We go down. There's about 7-8 minutes left in the first half. We go down. I thought we were scoring. We're going to score a touchdown. That didn't look so well. And then we score a field goal. And then we get the ball back with about right under at the 2 minute warning. And the Niners look so slow. I was like, oh my god, we're on the 20-yard line. There's no way we're going to score. First play incomplete. Second play, Cap's running around, gets knocked down or something, gains a couple yards. And then the third down, he throws a deep bomb, which I'm like, what? The Niners haven't thrown the ball over 40 yards in this whole season. Boom. Brandon Lloyd beats Javaris Jenkins, who always looks to get that pick six. He always looks to creep up and on third down and get a pick. Oh, man, Petit struck out swinging. God dang it. But Javaris Jenkins got that, was always looks for the pick, so the Niners ran a double move, which means we faked like he was doing one move. Javaris Jenkins cut right in front of Brandon Lloyd and left Brandon Lloyd wide open deep. Cap threw an absolute perfect ball. Brandon Lloyd held off Jenkins and scored, which was huge. Going into 10, we're down 10-14 going into the second half, and we get the ball first, and we're ready to go. From then on, our offense looked great. Cap went 22 for 35, which is a lot of times throwing for Kaepernick. He threw for 343 yards and 3 touchdowns, and he should have had another one. I mean, we were down the red zone. I think we're on the 3-yard line. It was second down. He rolls out to his right. He throws it right to Vance McDonald for his first ever career touchdown. And Vernon Davis comes in, tries to catch it, and it goes incomplete. I mean, Vance McDonald's got to be a little bit upset because, his first ever career touchdown. Vernon's got tons of them. And Vernon had an awful game. If you look at it, he had three or four drops. One of those drops, it was a cross over the middle, very slightly thrown, easy to catch. Absolutely, he had to break one tackle and he was gone for a 60-yard touchdown, but he couldn't do that. He's not the best with his hands. He's not a great catch. So you're supposed to catch the ball on your fingertips. You're not supposed to catch it in your arms, and that's all he does. He tries to catch it against his chest. He tries to catch it on his forearms, and that's just not the way to catch the ball, especially when you have Kaepernick ripping in balls. I mean, even this light ball he threw, it was just not very, he didn't look it into his hands. He was just trying to catch it and off his arms, and that never happens. Let's see. Bolden had a great game. Bolden, showed why he's such a dominant receiver. So on third down, they run these option plays with him. What option means for a wide receiver is that they can go run and then they could sit down. They look at the defense and they sit down into an open spot, and then he goes where the opening is in the defense. And it's you have to have such great relationship with the quarterback to the wide receiver to find out where he's going to be in the option routes. Going to be, you know, Bolden's the best at those option routes where he can move a defense over 5-6 yards and then open up the other side of the, for Crabtree, you know, anything like that. All right, there's a pitching change going on in the Giants game. Shelby Miller is out. And let's see who's coming in. They're going to bring in Randy Choate, the guy who gave that game away last time. But what Vernon Davis is good at is he's great at run blocking. It showed. The Niners were able to run the ball at a decent, you know, Hyde had some good runs, Gore had some good runs. You know, they just draw them out. They make them tired in the third, late third, fourth quarter. You know, that's when the Niners are the best at pounding the Brock. Count is 2-0 to Blanco. Randy Choate is in. My segment is about to come up, so I'm just going to give you live updates for the rest of the time. Just talk to you a little bit more about the Niners. So next week is the Broncos. We don't have Patrick Willis. He has turf toe. He's not going to play. Navarro Bowman is another couple weeks out. Alden Smith is another couple weeks out. So how does our defense play against the Broncos? Well, I don't know. We had Dante Johnson in, our rookie cornerback, come in. You know, I don't know how is Paris Cox going to play against Welker, or how is, you know, who's going to cover Demaryius Chris Culliver? I don't know if he's got enough foot speed for him. Terrell Brown is gone, who was able to cover him a couple years ago. But it's going to be very interesting. I'm very interested in seeing this. So that's all about what's going to happen in the Broncos game. Our offense has to put up a lot of points if we want to be a part of it. You know, we can't just be 3-and-out. We can't kick field goals. We have to score touchdowns, and that's the name of the game against the Broncos. We have to score a lot of touchdowns. My sister is actually going to be at the game. It's her birthday tomorrow, and she's flying to Denver on Friday, and she's going to the Broncos-Niners game, and she is very happy. She went to the University of Boulder. She loves it. All right. 3-1. Blanco walked. First and second, two outs, and Joe Panic is up. So let's hope that is. That is all for my show today. I am thankful for you listening. I will be here next week, Wednesdays from 6 to 7, Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bus Stop. Thank you so much, and good night.